Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Peggy Ayres. Each week at this time, we visit with an author, editor, or publisher from our region. We hope to find out a little bit about her life, what prompts her to write, and give her an opportunity to read some of her work for us. We're very pleased to have Peggy Ayres with us today. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you for having me.
Peggy is a Celtic animist who sees the world through a spiritual lens. She is a devotee of nature-based culture and all that is sacred to the earth. A social justice activist, Peggy is working with the decolonization process in herself and others and is an advocate for the recovery of authentic ancestral wisdom and traditions for all people. She is also the longtime book reviewer for The Link and has just published her new book, Ancient Spirit Rising, Reclaiming Your Roots and Restoring Earth Community. So, Peggy, tell us a little bit about your book, Ancient Spirit Rising, and how you came to write it.
Well, I've spent quite a bit of time over the past 20 years working with First Nations community. I have a lot of First Nations friends. I attend a lot of First Nations events. And there was something that an elder said at an elders gathering at Trent University, it was about 6 years ago, that really stuck with me, and I decided to start writing about it. And the writing has taken 3 years to engage with that one small remark that that elder made that day. So it's been a wonderful process, and I just found so much to talk about in the book that wasn't really being discussed in the different places that I could see. So a lot of research. It's a work of nonfiction. But I should tell you what the elder said that day.
I was going to ask you.
So in part of this wonderful talk, James Dumont, he's a highly well-known, renowned Anishinaabe elder. He teaches at Laurentian University. He simply said that everyone needs to return to their own indigenous knowledge. And that really stuck with me because I thought he's saying two things there. First of all, he's giving us a great blessing. He's implying that we all have it. We all have indigenous knowledge somewhere in our background. And I think he was also speaking to the phenomena of cultural appropriation, that there are a lot of non-native people that kind of pretend they're native and they assume a native identity. It's quite I don't know if you know about it, it's a strange phenomena, kind of in New Age spirituality. And that has to be addressed because it's an aspect of racism when you look at it deeply enough. So those were the two tracks I took in the book. And the other aspect was, well, where do we locate this indigenous knowledge if every person has it in whatever ethnicity in our background, it's somewhere there. How far back do we go? How do we go about locating it? So that's the second half of the book. The first half of the book is social justice.
Right. So the spirit rising or the authentic ancestral wisdom is not necessarily First Nation.
Oh, no, no. It's our own, people, whether it's Polish or German or Italian. I think it predates sort of the rise of empire, nation states, and we do have to go back quite a long way. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people doing that work, though. It sounds very challenging, and it is, but there are groundbreaking scholars, authors, activists, and a lot of pagan practitioners. There's a whole movement of people that are also already doing this work.
Right.
So it's happening. It is like we have to do it all on our own.
Who's the audience for this book?
Well, I wrote the book primarily for my own white cohort, for the New Age community primarily, and it was like addressing the cultural appropriation phenomena, which is, it's a serious issue. It's very harmful to First Nations. Well, it has to be talked about. It brings in elements of white privilege, what gives us the entitlement to assume an identity that isn't our own. So it's a huge conversation on cultural appropriation. But then the good news is the part of the book that identifies how we get more authentic, how we do find our own indigeneity as white people, because we can do it without appropriating from anybody.
So
it's hard, but we can do it.
So if there is something in the First Nation philosophies or cultural practices that speaks to me as a non-First Nation person, is there a way of incorporating that into my life without appropriation.
I know, it's a complicated labyrinth, I call it, mm-hmm. but I think it's having that sense of boundaries and knowing, applying your own personal standard of ethics. And First Nations want us to learn. They do want us to know their cultures, not inside out, but we need to have a passing knowledge of the cultures and to be better social justice activists. We have to know what the cultures are we're helping to protect. So yes, we should know as much as we possibly can. But I think what the fine line is and what the boundary here we have to recognize is to, we can engage with it in terms of values, but not the actual spiritual practice itself and not the actual cultural property, like say something, well, they actually don't mind us wearing some of the jewelry. So here we go with the labyrinth. It's complicated. But yeah, the spiritual practice, better to learn from First Nations in terms of the values. That's what I've heard over and over from First Nations teachers. It's okay for you to learn about our values and use those values in your own work. Just don't take the actual practice. Don't take the actual ceremony that has taken us 1,000 years to develop. That is not yours to take. Don't take the pipe. Don't take the sweat lodge. Develop your own from your own Indigenous traditions, mm-hmm. which is back to what James Dumont told us in the beginning. Get back to your own Indigenous knowledge.
Now, you said that you wrote about social justice and then about finding your own ancestral wisdom traditions. So there's part one and two in your book.
Yeah, very so distinct.
How are they distinct and how did you set them up?
Yeah, it's a real learning journey for me, too. Prior to writing the book, I sort of had a passing knowledge of social justice, but to really go in depth and really study what is racism? Where did it come from? Has it always existed throughout time? What is white privilege? What is white fragility, which is the inability that white people are very reluctant to talk about these issues, even though change isn't going to happen in terms of social justice unless we have this huge discussion. And how bad things are still for First Nations, what happened to them historically, the genocide that you could say is still going on today with some of these legislations are still trying to make First Nations people invisible in this country. It's like Canada's dark secret, right? So once we engage with all that material, and then there's a larger picture too in terms of the intersectional oppressions. There's feminism, which is the response to the patriarchy. There's other oppressions as well. Disabled people aren't quite treated as equally as able people, able-bodied people. Male privilege, of course. People with more money seem to have an easier way in this society than people living in poverty. So that's what intersectionality is. That's what the society is modeled under. Well, so just looking at all these things clearly, and then what do social justice activists do? What is allyship to First Nations? How can we help them? What's the protocol for working with First Nations in terms of social justice? And it's just certain definitions. Once people understand that, it's a clear decision, do I want to become a social justice activist after that? So, but it's good to understand the basic principles.
And then the second part is about finding your own.
Yes, that was the fun part. The first part's a little heavy and a little challenging, but the second part was pure delight to write. I got to write about sacred sites and practices like animism, which is seeing all the earth spirits in nature, and eco-psychology, which is a wonderful new movement that incorporates how important nature is to our mental health and how children need to be taken out into nature more. There's a practice called earthing, which if you put your body into contact with the earth, it's very healing for different illnesses. There's been some wonderful science. I think the science is just catching up to what Indigenous people already knew. But anyway, and eco-mysticism, which is this experience sometimes a lot of people have had in nature. It seems to happen over and over. There's records of it throughout time. It's kind of like this epiphany that happens in nature. That's a chapter in the book as well.
Well, perhaps you could read something from Ancient Spirit Rising. What are you going to read for us?
I'll just read a little part that is more social justice. And then I think the reading in the second part is going to be more about Earth community.
Okay.
So I thought I'd do social justice first. Okay. As descendants of the original settler society, we need to understand the true history of the land we occupy and what agreements were in place before the building of empire. What treaty area do we live in? Whose land are we on? In the process of answering these questions, we may discover that our title to the land is questionable, and we begin to see the contradictions in the foundational myth of Canada's master narrative. The immorality of being on stolen land suggests the need for dialogue between the dominant culture and First Nations on the responsibility to honor existing treaties, table new ones, and acknowledge the right to self-determination, which has never been withdrawn. It is time to become an honorable partner with First Nations and return to the original values of sharing the bounty of the land. As we transition to an ecological-based society instead of an economic one, our mutual concern should focus on ethical land use and actions that oppose and protest the desecration of all lands and waterways. For the past 500 years, under the domination of empire, settlers have been abysmal stewards of the land. We haven't done a good job. And we must now relearn earth literacy and an obedience to natural law as we re-inhabit the places we call home. Knowing that ecological balance is integral to our freedom and our own survival on Turtle Island, a new paradigm of governance and coexistence as connected to the web of life is paramount. If we are mindful of our privileges, a spiritual connection to the land can perhaps be shared by both Native and non-Native community. And as we collectively move toward decolonization, our earth literacy and interdependence of the land and each other can make us aware that we have obligations to First Nations as allies to empower their sovereignty and create the conditions that make peaceful coexistence possible.
Well, thank you. And now we'll take a short break.